Today I'm welcoming back an old friend, Chris Woodruff. It's been a long time since you've been on my show.
Thanks, Dave. It has. I don't know what the deal is. Maybe I offended you at some point.
I thought it was you.
Didn't buy you enough drinks.
You know, all this time I was thinking it was me and it was you.
It's not me, it's you.
So. What have you been working on?
Oh, a lot of stuff. Just mostly a lot of stuff up and down the stack.
Mm-hmm. You're known for your data stuff. You used to be, what was that? You were some strange MVP at one time.
Data platform development.
Data platform. Are you still that?
No.
Now what are
you? No, they're getting rid of that.
Okay.
I am just visual C#.
Okay.
So I got thrown into the heap.
Let's talk data. Let's still talk data.
Yeah, let's talk data. No, I still do. I'm writing an OData book right now.
Mm-hmm.
And still very passionate about data. And I think it's a very overlooked part of a developer's story.
That's interesting to say that, because my experience is that almost every application I write has a database component to it. There's some sort of persistent store on the back end.
Yeah.
And generally that's the purpose of the app.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, to store something to disk or to retrieve something from disk or both.
Yeah, even people that write games mm-hmm. have to deal with data, because they have to deal with saved games.
Saved state.
They need to deal with achievements and certain awards and stuff like that. So everyone deals with data. Even scientific applications, they deal with data input.
Sometimes lots of data.
Yeah, I mean, probably more data that they can handle.
So what are we neglecting? What should we be thinking about that we're not?
I mean, there's a whole... And there's this whole idea around data experiences. And, you know, we have user experiences that make that interaction between the user and the application better.
Yeah.
But there's also that interaction between an application and the data repository.
Okay, that's what you mean when you say data experience.
A
term I haven't heard
yet. DX. I call it DX.
All right.
And you have to think about it, because there's lots of different ways that can affect. It can affect user experience, because it if you're getting too much data or dealing with too much data, it can ruin the performance of your application.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not getting the right kind of data, then your app will not meet the requirements that maybe it was given.
Okay.
So but I mean,
like functional requirements, performance requirements. There's some scalability requirements.
And scalability, you have to think about if I write a mobile application, I can't. And you know what? A lot of people write these applications, and they're on a very fast Wi-Fi connection,
mm-hmm.
and they don't think about things like, you know what. What's the performance of my application if I put this on a very rural cellular network that doesn't have 3G?
Yeah, and drops lots of times.
And
slow
drops.
And it drops a lot.
Yeah, so you have to. It's not a science all by itself. It really goes along with the user experience too. And they both kind of fit side by side, I think. Like one example that I learned a couple years ago. When I started creating the MVP application, it was MVP Summit event, the Windows Phone application that we wrote for the MVP Summit.
That was you and Joe did that, right?
Yeah, and among other people.
Okay.
I had people that I let beta test it that were from Europe. And they told me something I didn't know. They said that data is very expensive in Europe. That if I'm going to get, and they were seeing that my application kept getting the same data over and over again.
Oh, and they're paying for all that bandwidth.
And they're paying for that data. So that's another piece of the data experience that we need to think about. We need to think about the economic constraints of the data that we have.
Hmm.
I mean, there's also data experience. Do I put my data on-premise or do I put it in the cloud?
Or both.
Or both.
And if both, how do I keep them in sync?
And there's all these different things that you have to think about.
Uh-huh.
Do I, if I'm getting a huge amount of data that I have to curate, do I care about all the data? I mean, you may get gigs of data every day. I mean, we produce so much data that maybe some data's not worth working on.
Maybe it's not even worth storing, but that's a different
issue. But or a portion of that data.
So a good example of that is activity logs. Let's say your transaction logs.
Yeah.
You know, every time somebody updates any row, I've been on systems where another row gets written somewhere else that says, you know, Chris on January 17th, he edited this row and he changed this value from this to this.
Yeah, original value and new value.
That's a lot of data. What do we do with that data?
Well, who do we even need to do that? No. I don't know. I mean, so that's the whole thing. I mean, it just comes down to, you know what, I think all these talks that we have at conferences are great around user experiences.
Okay.
And UX is really important, and having great CSS for our web applications and great design. But we have to think about the design of our data. So I also think about things like when I work a lot with OData. Mm-hmm. So when I build my OData feeds, or you can relate it to web APIs. When you build all that, you have to really think about who's going to use it, who's not going to use it, how they're going to use it, and maybe learn after if you push it out. Always be ready to learn about unexpected ways that your data is being used.
Right. Somebody may you may not ever test it. When somebody just doesn't put any filters on your data, for example.
Sure.
That's allowed.
Yeah.
Somebody probably will do that.
Yeah. So in OData, there's a thing called server-side paging.
Okay.
That even if I say, give me all of the data from this entity list, and there's a million rows,
it'll only
or a million entity records, it will, if I don't have server side paging, it will give me everything.
Yeah.
Now imagine a million rows coming across HTTP in one set. What's that going to do?
Right.
Yeah, it's going to choke. It's going to choke everything from the point where that database or that data is being stored all the way to your application. Mm-hmm. So there's ways, technical ways and there's development ways that we can limit some of that data. So think about that. If you have those around certain features and certain technologies and databases and frameworks that you're using, learn that and how it can really deal with data.
So if you're doing if you're defining data experience as the interface to the data, you would include that interface as the web API in front of that, or the web SOAP service in front of that, or the OData service in front of that. That is the interface to the data. But you could also define it as there's an interface between web API and the data, that ADO.NET code.
Sure, there's multiple interfaces. I mean,
I'll tell you where I my thoughts on this, because this fits in with something that a paradigm shift that I've gone through in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
I used to start my applications at the back end. And I'd start with database. I think it's because I was a FoxPro guy when I started out, and everything is
I did the same thing.
Sort of built around your database in FoxPro. One day I was on a project, and I said, I'll take the database stuff. I'll build some stored procedures and a data layer, and what did I build? I built an add method and stored procedure and an update and a get all and a get by ID. And I did it for each table and a couple other things. And I handed them off. And the other guy who's building the front end, the middle tier, the business logic, he said, okay, where's the method to do this, to get my last name? Oh, I don't have that. I'll go write that. And I go write it. Okay, where's the method to do this? Where's the method to do that? And I didn't, most of the methods he asked for, I didn't have written. And most of the methods I had written,
he was never going to use.
And a light went on in my head after that project. I realized, you know what? I'm doing it wrong. I need to start building from the front back.
So
and think about, even if I'm not building it, I need at least to think about it, at least to build those interfaces and see what's going to call this application.
So I think,
and I think that this fits in with what you're saying.
Yeah, so it does. I build from the middle out both ways.
Interesting.
So I think about my model, because my model doesn't drive, my model drives my data repository. and it also drives my user interface. So I think about what type of entities are in my model. I think about the interactions between those entities.
That's interesting. So don't, you don't think that the user interface drives the model. You think the model drives the user interface?
For me, it does.
For you, it does. Okay.
Because that's the way my brain works. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't sit down and start thinking in terms of grids and drop-down lists and stuff like that.
I guess that's true. I guess I was thinking more in terms of the client that's going to call. Whatever code I write, I want to start by thinking about what client is going to call this. And it's easiest to do this if I've written the client. And I have, this is the idea behind test-driven development. I'm not a TDD fanatic at all. But that's the idea. You write a breaking test. You write something that calls a method that you haven't even written yet. It doesn't even compile.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the idea behind this. And that forces you, first of all, write at least an interface or a not implemented method or something like that.
Yeah. So, now, I don't know. I grew up in an age where everyone built their databases first. Mm. And really, they were building their databases based on models. So my thinking is, I'm going to build my model in my code. So I'm going to, and some of this is like model-driven development.
Okay.
Or in the entity
Define
framework.
Define that real quick, model-driven development.
Model-driven development is this idea that I'm going to explain and I'm going to drive all of my entities that my application will use and will set. So really, in a sense, I'm going to build out my classes that represent my entities.
Okay.
And then I'm going to build out the behaviors of those entities related to other entities.
Okay.
I'm not a model-driven development expert.
Okay.
But that's how I see things in terms of, and you know, if you just sit down and draw circles on a piece of paper and name those circles and then put lines between them to say which ones interact. Like if I'm thinking in terms of like baseball data, I have a player, I have hitting data, pitching data, fielding data. And so by doing that, I know that maybe one of my methods for batting data is give me the data for a player and a year. Or give me data for a player for his total career.
I think we're on the same page with this because we're basically moving those questions further away from the database and closer to the front. And how close we are. Because once you start asking that question in English like you just did, then you start asking it, what's that call going to look like?
Yeah.
Whereas before, at least for me,
I
was starting to ask it in terms of what's the method signature going to look like? And then handing that off and saying, here, you can make the call to call this.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking more, what's easiest for me to call? I'll write that.
Well,
And give it to the
sure,
and then also write that interface afterwards.
And I'm not a user experience expert. I'm not a designer.
Right.
So if I come out with all these, we'll say, this model, and then drive all these really statements about the model, then I can hand that off to a designer who can then build a user interface.
That's a good
for
point.
It.
We need to work on our skill sets as well. And I think this ties back to the user experience or the data experience you were talking about earlier, because once you're driving it from the consumers of the data, then this question starts popping up, you know, I have this method call. Here's the way I'm going to consume the data. Does that work with my data model?
Yeah.
Does that work with my data interface?
And it also deals with how do I transport my data?
Yeah.
Do I need it compressed? Do I need it encrypted?
And who would know that? Your client would know that.
Yeah.
The database doesn't know that.
No, database
doesn't care. Because
database
doesn't really care. It's usually the client that pays the penalty for that.
But it's still data related.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not really user experience related. So so there's lots of ways that DX can affect UX and vice versa.
Sure.
But that's why I'm saying they have to both be kind of thought about together and not just, you know, everyone, because it's sexy and it looks good and you can visually see it, you can't visually see data.
Yeah.
So people often kind of don't think about it as much as they probably should.
All right.
So I just
try you're to, thinking about are you writing about it? Is this going to be part of your OData book or your blog?
I mean, we'll probably have some. The book might have some things that, okay. that you can, that the protocol gives you to make your data experience better. But it probably won't have explicit things. But I mean, I try to blog about it. I do have a talk. I'm going to be speaking at a big data enterprise conference in San Diego in May.
Okay.
And it's not Microsoft related. It's all about being a data experience expert.
What's the URL of your blog?
It's just chriswoodruff.com.
Okay.
Yeah. And you can go out and to Deep Fried Bites. And we're probably going to... I'm going to try to do some more data-related podcast episodes coming up this year. So stay tuned for those. And we'll have a good time. But
Chris, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate it. I enjoy my friends even more than I enjoy my technology.